I think it's important for first of all, I want to paint the picture that the English could never have entered Ireland at all without permission from the Roman Catholic Church. During the time of the famine, the Roman Catholic Church encouraged and advised the people to keep paying their rents even though they were starving, right? So what I'm going to do is paint a few tiny pictures of what went on in Ireland, which are further than me offering my opinion. This great book by this guy called Jack O'Brien, it's called British Brutality in Ireland, and it's printed by, let me see, the Mercier Press, which is in Dublin. It's very hard to get to the shops for obvious reasons, but in it the guy quotes many, many other historians, and I think the best thing to do if we are going to talk about it is actually quote historians who wrote at the time that this stuff was actually really going on, so that most people, like, obviously will try it on with me about I can't possibly know what I'm talking about, being a woman, etc., and not having gone to college, as our journalist friend did last time. And so in order to protect myself from the kind of anger that comes up in me when someone throws that at me, I'm just going to write this book. So bear with me, I want to paint a little picture. So, okay, I'm completely and utterly mortified as well, so. Okay, now, when Henry II of England landed in Waterford on the 17th of October 1171, he had with him an army of some 4,000 men and the authority of an important papal document known to history as the Bull Laudabiliter. Henry clearly meant business. He intended to secure control of the land of Ireland and to keep it. He was properly armed and his papers were in order. So far as the papacy was concerned, Ireland lay within the legitimate sphere of influence of England, and despite the Reformation, that view has been demonstrated time and time again up to modern times. What most people don't realise is the Church's involvement in what took place in Ireland and later the famine. This papal document, the Bull Laudabiliter, states clearly that in view of Henry's acknowledgement that Ireland and all islands which have accepted the doctrines of the Christian faith belong to the jurisdiction of the Blessed Peter and the Holy Roman Church, and that he, Henry, proposes to enter Ireland, A, to enlarge the boundaries of the Church, B, to proclaim the truth of the Christian religion to a rude and ignorant people, C, to subject the people to law, and D, to root out from them the weeds of vice. He, Pope Adrian, the first British Pope, agrees to the proposed invasion. The English pontiff also declares that the people of Ireland should receive the invading king with honour and revere him as their lord, provided always that the rights of the Church remain whole and inviolate, and that an annual tribute of one penny from every house, Peter's pence, be paid to the Vatican. So for money, the blessing and approval of Adrian IV for the proposed invasion of Ireland was of vital importance to Henry in a century where the temporal power of the papacy was at its height. In a document called Dictus Papa, published a century before the invasion and attributed to Pope Gregory VII, it is proclaimed, this is to paint the picture of how the Brits couldn't come into Ireland without permission from the Church, but the Church always sneak over and make it look like the Brits did it so that we're all fighting the wrong enemy. Okay? Now, so this thing, Dictus Papa, in the age that they were so powerful, this is why they were so powerful, because this is what they said about themselves, their declaration. The Roman pontiff alone is properly called universal. He alone may depose bishops and restore them to office. He is the only person whose feet are kissed by all princes. They used to publicly flog the kings of the world, okay? He may depose emperors, he may be judged by no one, he may absolve from their allegiance the subjects of the wicked. The Roman Church has never erred and never can err, as the scriptures testify. One of Gregory's successors, Pope Innocent III, who reigned from 1198 to 1216, reiterated these claims in even more uncompromising terms. As the moon receives its light from the sun and is inferior to the sun, so do kings receive all their glory and dignity from the Holy See. God has set the prince of the apostles over kings and kingdoms with a mission to tear up, plant, destroy, scatter, and rebuild. So these are the people who gave permission for Henry II to come into Ireland. During the time of the famine, got to paint another picture here. When the English came in, what they did was, say I'm a farmer and I'm living in this house, they drove the Irish out of their houses to live on their land. So I would be living in the shed in the garden, working the land, paying rent to a landlord who was living in my house, but the law was that I could only eat potatoes, which were grown on the land. If I grew any other vegetables, or I had chickens, or I had pigs, or I had cows, or anything else, I worked all these animals and I grew all these things, but the landlord took them all. All I could take was potatoes, and I was paying rent to the landlord for his fucking gracious permission for me to stay in my own back garden, which he robbed off me in the first place. Okay, this is the way the system was run. The English sent in their own settlers there, drove the people out to live in the mountains, made a law that they could be shot dead, literally, for eating anything other than potatoes. Okay? Now, I'm just going to figure out exactly where I'm going to start here. Okay. In its long struggle to gain and keep control over the Irish people, England has persistently sought to win and hold the support of the Catholic Church. It has every reason to be proud of its successes. The original letter of approval for the invasion of Ireland by Henry II, the Bull Lord Abilitar of 1155, came from the only Englishman ever to become Pope, Adrian IV. The Act of Union uniting Ireland with Great Britain had the support of the whole Irish hierarchy and many, if not most, of the lower clergy. So long as the Church had got free from the restrictions placed on it as an institution in the past, it was not much concerned about political liberty for the people. Indeed, in the struggle for political liberty, the Church, when it was not indifferent, was usually on the side of the British, as shown at the time of the Union in 1801, the Repeal Movement in 1842-44, the Fenians 1867, the Plan of Campaign 1887, and in 1916-21. Even when Catholics were given the right to enter Parliament in 1829 at the price of almost total disfranchisement, the Church did not object and could be called the original multinational. Throughout the famine period, this is the most important part, throughout the famine period, and this is the key fucking issue, throughout the famine period, the Church preached the rights of property, in other words, landlordism, as vigorously as the most ruthless landlords or capitalists. On the advice of their bishops and clergy, the poor paid their rents while their families were allowed to starve to death. It is related that at a meeting in the Conciliation Hall in Dublin, 1847, John O'Connell, MP, son of the Liberator, read a letter from the Catholic bishop in West Cork, in which the bishop states, "The famine is spreading with fearful rapidity, and scores of persons are dying of starvation and fever, but the tenants are bravely paying their rents." To which O'Connell exclaimed, "I thank God I live among a people who would rather die of hunger than defraud their landlords of the rent." Commenting on the whole situation in a book called The Fall of Feudalism in Ireland, Michael Davitt writes, "There is possibly no chapter in the wide records of human suffering and wrong so full of shame, measureless, unadulterated, sickening shame, as that which tells us of, it is estimated, a million people, including presumably 200,000 adult men, lying down to die in a land out of which 45 millions worth of food was being exported in 1 year alone for rent, the product of their own toil, and making no effort, combined or otherwise, to assert even the animal's right of existence, the right to live by the necessities of its nature. It stands unparalleled in human history, with nothing approaching to it in the complete surrender of all the attributes of manhood by almost a whole nation in the face of an artificial famine, because the priest said, pay the rent, keep, do it, right?" Now, the response, okay. This is Michael Davitt speaking again. "The responsibility for what happened, the holocaust of humanity which landlordism and English rule exacted from Ireland in a pagan homage to an inhuman system, must be shared between the political and spiritual governors of the Irish people in those years of a measureless national shame. One power rules the material interests of the people, the other their religious and moral convictions, both preached law and order. Both two agreed in fathering upon the Almighty the cause of the famine. It was the visitation of God. Hundreds of thousands of women, children and men were, on this hideous theory, murdered by starvation because of some inscrutable decree of God, of the God of the poor, who 2,000 years before had died to rescue them from the actual slavery of the Roman Empire and of other pagan powers, by his gospel, teaching and life among the working people. No more horrible creed of atheistic blasphemy was ever preached to a Christian people than this, and looking back with a shudder upon that time, one can well understand how and why it was that myriads of human beings into whose soul this moral poison had been instilled should have laid down and died in, this is an inverted commas, in obedience to the will of God, after having again, in inverted commas, bravely paid their rents. Now, most people, of course, in the church attacked people like Michael Dowd for saying this, but there were two churchmen who joined with him in complaining about it. And one of them was a guy called Dr. John Hughes, who was a bishop of New York, who lectured in New York on the 20th of March, 1847, saying, "I fear there is blasphemy in charging on the Almighty the result of human doings. The soil has produced its usual tribute for the support of those for whom it is cultivated. But political economy, finding Ireland too poor to buy the products of its own labour, exported the harvest to a better market and left the people to die of famine or live by alms. There is no law of heaven, no law of nature, that forbids a starving man to seize on bread whenever he can find it, wherever he can find it. I say to those who maintain the sacred and inviolable rights of property, that if they would have them respected, to be careful also and scrupulous in recognizing the rights of humanity. Let us be careful then not to blaspheme Providence by calling this God's famine." So that's extracts from this book, which is full of millions of other historians talking about what took place during the famine. So anyone who thinks it's incorrect to suggest that it was an artificial murdering of the Irish people can read this and all the other books which are quoted in here to find out about it. So the key thing is that, and again, like the child can't heal itself until it remembers, so the nation can't heal itself until they remember. The church, having given permission for all this to be done in Ireland, then took over the educational system in Ireland. And in the history books which they wrote, they taught us that there was a famine. Now, when they use the word famine, it suggests that there was no other food in the country. The shipping lists from the time of the famine are also in this book, which show hundreds of thousands of tons of food being shipped out of the country under armed guard during all of the worst years of the famine. Okay? So, during the time the English came around into the houses of starving families, or into the lands of starving families, and offered them money not to teach the children Irish, which of course the people took because they were starving, but because they lost their language, they lost contact with their history, because the way we used to pass on our history was vocally, we used songs to pass on our history, and that's why basically we don't remember. We think there was a famine, and we're all walking around the place not being able to remember what really did happen to us. And when you have grown up in Ireland and you realise what an in-pain place it is, and what with it having the highest statistics of child abuse in Europe, etc., you realise how much of that is because of this history, because of the people not knowing who they really are or where they really came from, or indeed being able to grieve the violence that they have gone through. Because it is true what Sean Arreda says, that how the hell can you grieve a thing until you remember it? But the reason I think why we haven't been able to grieve it is because we've been fighting the wrong enemy, because the church are so clever that they've made us think that it was the English that did it to us. But it wasn't really. It was the church who did it for money and in the name of Jesus Christ. So, there you go.
Do you ever see, just as an Irish person, the Irish nation being healed?
Yeah, I do, I think.
And
so.
Peace.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think it's always, it's happening, already it's happening. Yeah. It has been, it's a process. But, again, I'm sure I'm not the only person to say it, but, it's not only the IRA who are violent. You know what I mean? And it wasn't us who started the violence in the first place. I don't agree with the use of violence as a means of achieving anything, almost. But I can see why it has led to this, basically. But I think it needs to be remembered by everybody that in the first place, we were brutalised for no reason. And because of that, we've been very, very angry. And because we haven't been acknowledged that these things ever have happened to us. I think until it's acknowledged that we did get severely brutalised and some sort of apology or recognition happens, it'll be very hard for people not to be angry. I can see why it leads to that level of violence. But it's important for everyone to be aware of the fact that it was the British and the Roman Catholic Church who brought violence to Ireland. We were a matriarchal society before the Roman Catholic Church and the British, who were their army, came in there. And in matriarchal societies there was never any warfare.